I'm not above saying it. I was a real bookworm. At the height of my career, which I consider to be between 5th and 6th grade, I probably read about 50 books during the school year. I can fondly remember my teacher, whose reading tracker needed to have additional pages added to it, simply to fit all of the entries that I was creating. And to be completely fair, I was really proud of this. I think I might have read more just to feel like I was better than everyone by reading a lot, rather than for the sake of reading. But hey, I got a lot out of it either way, and as I've grown, I found a budding interest in telling stories rather than simply reading them. As I've written and read my way through whatever I have time for, I found there's a lot of different ways to do it. And while the high record of my capabilities from elementary school is certainly in the past, the same propensity I had for crafting opinions is certainly as strong as ever, if you couldn't already tell. So today, I will be combining my writing, reading, and opinion making to go to this episode. Hello, and welcome to Jackie On, a podcast where I, Jackie, talk about my opinions on a bunch of different topics. This episode is Jackie On Narrative Perspectives in Books. As a quick note to my audience before I get into things, I have officially moved into college, so if the audio quality is different or you can hear my AC going in the background, please excuse me, for I am but a humble college student. But if you have any cheap tips for improvement, I will gladly take them, so send them my way. Now, let's get into it by talking about the first-person perspective. These are stories from the storyteller's point of view. An example of what that might look like is, I always loved walking around the park with my dogs, but something felt off today. It's focused on the perspective of a single person, and you are quite literally put into their head to experience the story as they see it. Now, I have mixed opinions about this kind of perspective. I love the fact that it creates unreliable narrators, and I know that's not necessarily a really popular opinion. Some people don't like unreliable narrators, but I actually quite enjoy it, because you only experience a narrow perspective from someone who may only view the world in a certain way. I think the reason why I like this is because I enjoy the horror, science fiction, and mystery writing genres, where intrigue and hiding certain clues and ideas is central to the story. So if you only see a certain perspective, it means that you kind of have to piece together what's going on. And oftentimes in these genres, a perspective can make or break what reality is. Let me give you an example of how this was done successfully. The Murderbot Diaries by Martha Wells is quickly becoming one of my favorite series. It tells a story of a robotic construct who was designed to be a security unit, but ended up hacking their own programming. And instead of going around murdering all the humans that wronged it, the self-named Murderbot only wants to watch TV, and yet keeps being thrown into adventure after adventure. Now, this series really highlights what to love about first-person narratives. The Murderbot doesn't speak a lot, it doesn't have too much dialogue lines, but has such a distinct and unique internal voice, has opinions about everything it encounters, and even the very nature of humanity that would be hard to express from a human narrator. Being able to read the story through the Murderbot's perspective also allows me, as a reader, to see how much it changes through the course of 7 books, how it starts off more robotic and ends up to be more humanistic, whatever that might mean. But it allows me to have an emotional tie to the character. With these types of stories, you can feel what the characters are feeling because you feel like you know them. You see their inside thoughts, you see their imperfections, and the things that they're really good at. Another example of this is the book The 7 Deaths of Evelyn Hardcastle by Stuart Turton. Or 7.5 Deaths of Evelyn Hardcastle. It really depends where you get your book. It's a book about a man who doesn't remember anything, but finds himself stuck in a time loop of a single day, visiting different bodies until he can figure out who killed Evelyn Hardcastle. Really, it's a great example of the unreliable narrator as well, because you only know as much as the character, and even as the reader, you can fall privy to some of the traps that the author lays to make you think one thing is true, when really something else is true. But the thing with a book like this is that it does reveal that the issue with first person is that the characterization and the voice for the character needs to be super strong. In The 7.5 Deaths of Evelyn Hardcastle, I had the half version, something that was noticeable is every time that the character went into a different person's body, his personality would change a little bit, but it wasn't super consistent. Sometimes it would change a lot, sometimes it wouldn't change much, and his knowledge basis was a little bit fluctuating. So having an unlikable or even a non-distinct character or something that's inconsistent in first person can turn me off a little bit from a story, and can sometimes happen super quickly, because it requires the author to be really in touch with the characters they're creating, but not too in touch, or else it seems like a self-insert of themselves. To me, I see three levels to this. Number one is like one end of the spectrum, all the way on the left, let's say, where you don't really have a good idea of what your character's like, and you're writing a character, but they're kind of vague, they're non-distinct, there's no reason for a reader to really connect to them in the first place. Or they're straight up unlikable. They're a bad person, the reader feels disconnect from them. There's like the perfect little middle where you have everything you need. And then there's all the way on the other side of the spectrum, on the right, in which the author knows almost too much, puts too much of themselves in the character, and it doesn't leave any room for the reader to feel a connection to that character, and instead it feels really awkward to read. And so I think what's important is getting to that middle ground, but it's way too easy for writers to kind of start off on either of these polarizing spectrums. But next, let's talk about one of the more contentious perspectives, the second-person point of view. Now, an example of what that might look like is, you were walking in the park, eyes glued to the flowers around you, when you heard a strange noise. It's focused on the perspective of a single person again, but this time you are the person, and the actions of the character are described using the formative word, you. I am really not a fan of this perspective, in the majority of cases. You really don't see it a lot because it's a challenging perspective to write in. Unlike first person, where you create a character and transport the reader into their head, now you're making the reader into the character. Now, obviously, you can't really do that because the character someone's written might not act the same way you or I would in a situation, and that's where I find that this can get a little bit complicated. But before going into that, I do want to admit that there are ways to write in second person with a distinct character and almost force the reader into a connection with that character via the second person perspective. This happens in the book pretty successfully, The Fifth Season by N.K. Jemisin, where one perspective, Esun, is written as the second perspective. This book is a great example of perspective switching, and it's about the experiences of three different characters as they navigate through the fifth season, or a massive seismic climate change period in the continent of the stillness. There's supernatural elements as all three have the ability to control energy. What's unique about Esun is that she's the only one written in second perspective. The other two are written in the third person perspective. And the thing with this book is that it uses second person almost like first person, making it into another unreliable narrator and following her thoughts. But instead of using I, it uses you, of course. Part of me does wonder why this choice was made, since it seems more of an artistic flair than an essential for the story, but it is unique, so I will give it that, and I think using second person might be meant to give readers a hint about the book's timeline and to delve deeper into the inconsistencies of the character Esun is. But the books do use mixed perspectives, as I mentioned before, and maybe that's because of the timeline thing, but I also think it's hard to write in the second person and have the reader well connected for an entire series of books. To allow for processing, the reader needs a break from you, from being told you're doing this, you're doing that. And that's why I think it's sandwiched between these third-person characters. But one thing I do think that is done very successfully in this book with the second person is that it almost puts you into Esun's head, and you're feeling, I think, more of what she's going through as opposed to an I perspective, without it being like, why is the character doing this because I wouldn't do that. And to be a bit more specific about this, this is the issue I often find with second person, is it might be something like, you're walking down the park, you see this, it scares you, you run. But if I think about myself, I would be like, no, I would not run. That's not something I would run from. So you have this disconnect already between the reader and the story, where you have one fighting against the other, and that's really hard to rectify because you want there to be a connection between the two. And so that's why I think you can be a very challenging pronoun to write with, but I do think there are some exceptions to this, besides N.K. Jemisin's writing in The Fifth Season, and I'd say one of these exceptions is the Choose Your Own Adventure book series. Because in its nature, if you get to pick what happens and what you experience, it's a bit more natural, because I can easily say, oh, I want to go this way, I want to do this, I want to do that. And it's like me being part of the story in a greater way, because it's very interactive. Regardless, I don't think I would narratively call the Choose Your Own Adventure book series like a book on the same level as one that has a predetermined plot. To me, it's a little bit more like a game where your choice makes all the difference rather than a story. Of course, this could be debatable because it is a book series, but it doesn't give the same impression as a lot of books give me, and so I kind of separate it. But before moving on, I would like to add another exception. If you know anything about me from any of my past episodes, it's that I'm all about the exceptions. But I think particularly in writing, there kind of has to be, because there's so many different types of books and genres, it's hard to be super strict about where they should lay. And when it comes to writing, too, rules are meant to be broken. None of this is, like, strict and fast, it's all my opinion. And so I want to be specific here, and when I say that I've been talking a lot about fiction books, but I think that non-fiction books in the second person are perfectly acceptable, as long as they don't take it too far. Basically, if I'm writing a book and I refer to my audience as you, but I'm writing about, say, the history of parks, it makes for a more engaging dialogue, since it feels more conversational than purely academic. For example, if I say, you might have been to a park sometime in your life and noticed the swing set. Well, did you know the swing set was created by this guy? And you might find this interesting. Like, I'm bringing you in with me. I'm telling you, I'm not telling millions of people reading my book. But, on the other hand, if you don't do that, it can sound a bit like, parks were created in this day by this person, and the swing set was created by this person. It feels more stale. And so I think the same thing can apply as well when you use first person. If I'm saying, like, I think you should know this about this subject, it creates more connection. And again, I think connection is really important in books, but this is for nonfiction. And I think these perspectives can make a little bit more sense than third person because you're directly speaking to an audience. And this is more for like informative or persuasive books. I think when you're creating a memoir or telling someone's story, again, you can use third person, but you get where I'm going with this. You get my point. There are exceptions out there, and I think nonfiction can create a lot of these exceptions because it's so broad, as opposed to fiction, which is a lot of just like plain storytelling. But I do think that's a great segue to start talking about the third person point of view. There are three main types that I'll cover under this perspective: cinematic, limited, and omniscient. Starting off with cinematic, an example of this is something like, John navigated through the park, turning his head to look at all the children running by. Typically, this type of narrative is very descriptive, but it doesn't tell you what's going on inside someone's head quite as much. It's like describing a movie, hence cinematic. You see what's happening, but you don't have the why until it gets uncovered via visual remark or specific imagery. Well, this is the narrative that many people can start writing in. I've always found it to be quite stale, because it relies a lot on show, don't tell. And let me tell you, I love show, don't tell, usually. But oftentimes this idea of showing people things as opposed to telling them can be mishandled by people who don't know how to write the show part. And that's why I think I like limited third person a lot more. An example of limited third person perspective would be more like, John navigated through the park, startled as he felt a small child tapping on his leg. He turned to see that they were wearing a really funny hat. I'm sure you've seen a similar narrative structure to this before. It blends third person with the first person perspective, in which the ideas and experiences of one character are examined. The difference between this and omniscient comes down to a few choices. To redo the example under omniscient perspective, John navigated through the park, unaware of the child in a funny hat that had run up to him, tapping on his leg in the hopes that he'll join their games. Clearly, we're getting the perspective of multiple characters at once, not just focusing on one house experiencing the world. Under limited, we just saw what John was thinking. But if we look to omniscient, we're also thinking about what the child is doing, so it really expands it to be considering all the characters and all of their mindsets. What's interesting with this perspective is that it can sometimes be challenging to know who to focus on or who's the main character. Because if I give you that small anecdote, it could be John or it could be the child. And trying to figure that out can be fun, but sometimes the omniscient perspective can jump around awkwardly and can thus confuse the reader into what you're even talking about. But to get into more specific examples, I want to talk about The Lord of the Flies, the classic book by William Golding, as a great example of the third-person omniscient perspective. It's about a group of British schoolboys who are the only ones to survive a plane crash on an uninhabited island and their struggles with humanity. It's a book that tries to wade its way through civility versus savagery and the morals of human beings. Or at least, that's what I was told in my 9th grade English class. And while the character in it, Ralph, is definitely set up to be the protagonist, you hear the perspective of all the characters sprinkled throughout, which is around to give you a glimpse of how Jack, the antagonist, rejects Ralph's leadership and decides to build his own. Part of the power of this perspective is how much it leaves to the reader. You hear the opinions and thoughts of the characters, but there is no narrator to guide what is the quote-unquote right opinion to have about those characters. You could easily decide that Ralph's way of peacefulness is better, or that Jack's savagery is better because it suits the conditions, and that is totally up to you as a reader. Of course, you know, there's still technically an antagonist and a protagonist, but the interpretations of the text are a lot more organic and less driven by what the author intends to have written. But the thing with these three types of third-person perspective that I've just mentioned is that they can totally be interchangeable, and oftentimes are. I've read many stories where people sprinkle each usage throughout. And it's really not a big deal if you can't tell what you're reading or what you're using to write. I find third person to be my favorite, especially more omniscient and limited, because I like being able to see the entire chessboard before I decide which player has an edge on the game, if you catch my drift. I like being able to see in everyone's heads and parse out what I think is important. I like it when the author leaves a lot of things up to me as the reader, because I find myself as a reader someone who likes to look deeply into books. And because of that, I want to talk about a particularly good book that I feel has been able to blend perspectives, particularly the third-person perspective trio, although there's a little bit of first-person sprinkled throughout, and that book is Perdido Street Station by China Mieville. Perdido Street Station is a book about a genius scientist and the cutting-edge science he's working on in his kind of underground lab, and eventually a ragtag group needs to come together to defeat evil monsters in this science fiction-type steampunk world. And I really cut down on the description there, because it gets dark, it gets deep, and it really is a fascinating read that deserves a lot more than the short description I just gave it. But what I love about this book is that when writing dialogue, Mieva will make it a lot more cinematic, keeping it vague, using that perspective to let the reader pick up on the cues that are being given, but he can also get more into the limited perspective in writing about Isaac, the protagonist. And then when more characters are in a scene, it can get a little bit more omniscient, depending on who he's focusing on. And as he writes about different characters, he lets certain details slip through to break from one narrative perspective into the next. And I think that's really powerful, because you're allowing the reader to get the right hints, but also giving them enough room to figure out what those hints mean and what's going to happen next. Really, though, at the end of the day, I think that whatever perspective suits your fancy is fine. I only suggest that you don't stick to one perspective to read books, because a lot of books don't stick to them either. I told you about Perdido Street Station, I told you about The Fifth Season. Both of these books use different perspectives, and they build on each other to create a cohesive story that challenges you to kind of search deeper as a reader. I think stepping outside of the window of one perspective and trying to get into a different one is really important. If you like first person, try third person. If you've sworn to never read a second-person perspective, maybe try a mixed-perspective book that brings second-person in an interesting way. As the philosopher Umberto Eco summed up in his book Six Walks in the Fictional Woods, what's important is being a model reader, someone who's willing to engage with the book on a deep level, to have discourse with its formatting and the choices made by the author in a critical way. There is no point in caring or reading about a book if you cannot realize that, as a reader, you're part of the story yourself, in whatever way you can imagine it. Because really, what is a story if no one reads it? A reader is as integral as a writer, because in order to interpret the cues being given, there has to be someone to take in those cues. And I find that to be actually quite beautiful. So whatever perspective and whatever book you choose to pick up next, which I really hope does not relate to Parks in any way, I'm sorry for using that example, but I felt like I had to keep it consistent somehow, I hope that you remember that you have just as much power as a reader as someone does when they're writing. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Jackie On. I hope to see you in the next episode.